The second reading today, St. Paul, in writing to the Ephesians, tells them, in fact declares to them, he says, that they must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. We live in a neo-pagan society. We have people surrounding us that are living as pagans do. We have to ask our own selves, how much have I given into that? How often do I live in the futility of what the world has to offer? We ask ourselves, what exactly is the futility of their minds? Well, there are lots of ways that that can be laid out. Seeking pleasure, materialism, money, fame, whatever. In a word, being selfish. That's why St. Paul says you have to be renewed in the spirit of your minds and put on the new self created in God's way in righteousness and holiness of truth. So it comes back to that same point. Do we really want to be holy? Do we really want the truth? We live in a world of lies. I've told you that before. The day is going to be coming in the next few years where every person is going to recognize that their entire life has pretty much been a lie. And they are going to be absolutely devastated because they were made for the truth and the truth would set them free. And they have been lied to and they sit in front of that stupid TV set and they actually believe the stuff that's being told them. And then all the other areas, they're messing with your mind. And we just soak it up. We have the truth literally right in front of us here. And we'd rather sit in front of Satan's sanctuary in the living room than come to the Lord's sanctuary and sit with him. We would rather immerse ourselves into the ways of the world than to immerse ourselves into the ways of heaven. What the devil does, and what we see even in the first reading, again, you want to talk about futility. The people of Israel had been slaves, literal slaves, for 430 years. They watched as there were 10 plagues that fell upon the Egyptians. They watched as the Red Sea was open and they marched through and it closed on the Egyptians. And what do? Oh, if we could just be back in Egypt where we had full bellies. I'd rather be a slave than be free. Because I had leeks and melons and meat. Really. This is going to become a very important point. Because if these unfortunate souls are able to do what they want to do, we may be faced with some of those same problems. What happens if we're hungry? What happens if we have nothing? What happens if it all is taken away? In his letter to the Hebrews, St. Paul told us that the early Christians rejoiced when all of their things were taken away by the government. Could we do that? You see, they had their minds focused on the Lord, and if all their stuff got taken away, they could rejoice because they weren't focused on the futility of this world. It's all going to be left behind anyway. So now we have to put it in a context. What if? What if all those things happen to us? And they're coming. Well, we go back. We look at the first reading. You had 1.5 million people wandering about in the desert. And we heard just a little snippet today how God took care of them. He fed them with manna. The problem is, in this case, they actually translated the thing so you don't really see it. But it says, on seeing it, the Israel asked one another, "What is this?" Put into Hebrew, they looked at one another and said, "Manna, what is it?" That's how it got its name. They had no idea what this was. Moses said, "Hey, this is the bread that God's giving you." So he provided bread for 1.5 million people every day for 40 years. And then we heard about the quail. Now you can talk to some of these people and say, well, you know, depending on where they were in the desert, the quail, it might have been, you know, their migration season, and so they get exhausted and they just kind of fall. And it's like, yeah, that happens. Not for 1.5 million people every day. And that's an awful lot of quail. But remember, even when Moses said, how are you going to do this? God says, is it too difficult for me to set a table in the desert? There was an army quartermaster who looked at this, and he said, just to put it into context for us, in order to feed that number of people, it would take a train with all the cars filled top to bottom and front to back that was 1 mile long 3 times a day. That's how much it would have required to feed that many people. And that's what God did. Now, if God can feed 1.5 million people every day for 40 years and provide water for them, by the way, they were out in the desert. I was in that desert. There is nothing to stop the sun. It's 110 to 120 degrees. It is dry as a bone. I mean, literally the humidity is like 2%. You will shrivel up in a pretty short period of time without water. So not only did he provide bread and meat, out in the desert he provided water. And it came out of a rock. So can God provide for you? Of course he can. He can provide for 1.5 million people. He can provide for you too. The question is, do we trust him? Do we rely on him? Are we confident in him? Do we really have faith? Isn't that what Jesus told us in the gospel? This is the work of God, to believe in the one whom he sent. Now, by believing, that doesn't just simply mean, oh yeah, I believe that Jesus came down from heaven 2,000 years ago. So does Satan. So I mean, it's excellent that you believe that, but so does the devil. What the devil didn't do is allow it to get into the heart. He didn't live it. He rejected it. He knows what the truth is. St. James says it very clear. Even the demons believe and they tremble. So we need to have that objective part of the faith, yes. But we have to get it into the heart. We need to put it into practice. We need to live it. And that's where the real question comes. Are we living like the bunch of pagans that are around us, or are we truly living holy Catholic lives? It was the fact of the way that the early Christian people lived that brought about the conversion of the world. And it's about the way that today's people are living that is bringing about the destruction of the church. Because we're not living it. And it comes right down to this point where, once again, you want to talk about the futility of the mind and the patheticness of human nature. Jesus talks to these people. He had just fed 5,000 people out in the desert, and he just walked across the water. And so he says, look, you're not looking for me because you saw signs. You're looking for me because you had your fill of bread. And so they said, well, what kind of sign can you work so that we'll believe in you? Like, really? What would he need to do? He just fed 5,000 people and walked across the water. So what sign does he need to do so that we'll believe? Maybe if he gave himself to us in the form of a piece of bread, what do you think about that? Would we believe then? No, because we can't see him there. We can't feel him there. We can't touch him there. So it can't be real. Well, with modern science, there are all kinds of things that we now know are floating all over the place that we can't see or smell or taste or touch. If you've got your stupid phone with you, you know fully well that there are all those vibrations or whatever it is that they're sending out from the towers, and your phone wouldn't work without it. But can you see them? Can you touch them? Can you hear them? Can you smell them? No. Are they real then? Turn on your phone, you'll find out. Yeah, they're real. But do you have proof that that's what it is? No. Jesus told us that he's truly present in the Holy Eucharist. He is the bread come down from heaven. And over the next few weeks, as we hear from the sixth chapter of St. John's Gospel, we're going to hear him tell us point blank, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. And the people walked away because they refused to believe. So now look in your own heart and ask yourself, what about me? Do I believe? Not just the objective part of it, the subjective part. Am I willing to really live this? If that truly is Jesus, and it is, shouldn't I be doing something a little bit different? Think of the story of the Catholic guy who was giving his Protestant friend a tour of the church. And he pointed the tabernacle and he said, well, that's where Jesus is. And he said, the Protestant friend said, no, it's not. The Catholic guy said, yeah, it is. The Protestant said, no, you don't believe that. He said, no, I'm telling you, I'm Catholic. This is what we believe. That's Jesus truly present in the Eucharist. And the Protestant said to him, if you really believed that that was Jesus, you'd be on your face right now. You wouldn't be wandering around with your hands in your pocket talking. You'd be focused on him. Do we really believe? Or have we fallen into the old thing of that we just get so accustomed to him that we've kind of learned to pay no attention? We need to put this into practice, and we need to do it rather quickly. For our own sake, but just because of what's coming. The futility of the way that we have been living is going to be exposed to everyone. Well, the elite, of course, will think that they can laugh at us because we're so stupid that we actually believed their lies. That's okay. They've already made their choice. Unless they convert, we know where they're headed. The question is your own soul. The question has to do with you. Because that's what the Lord is interested in. He's interested in you. And he wants you to live a holy, righteous life. He wants you to live according to the faith that you profess. He wants you to be rejecting the old way, the pagan way, to no longer live like the Gentiles in the futility of their mind, and to live truly as Christian and Catholic holy people. Do we really have that kind of faith? That's what we all have to look at. And again, look at the blessing you've got. You have an opportunity to really think about this and pray about this before it hits. Look at all the rest of the people who are out there wandering aimlessly in the futility of their minds, in the futility of their lives. Oh, this is what's most important. I got to get a new video game. There's a concert. I got to do this or that. Oh, this is what's most important. It's not important at all. We can look at this now, because when all these things hit, that's when those people are going to have to look at it. You've got a chance to prepare. You've got a chance to think and pray. You've got a chance to get yourself ready. By that, I don't mean fill your basement with more stuff. I mean get your soul prepared and learn to trust. Put the faith into practice. Jesus is God. He is all powerful. He can do anything. And we all know that, and we'll give him lip service about it, but the reality is when push comes to shove, most of us don't really believe it. Oh yeah, I know he can do anything he wants, but he wouldn't do that for me anyway. Really? If you could do anything that you wanted for your children, would you not want to? You have the ability to do it, but they're just my children, I don't care. You are God's children. He loves you. He wants only the best for you. He's going to take care of you if you are willing to allow it. You have to believe in him for that to happen. So that's what this is about. Again, it comes back to what Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of God and his way of righteousness. All the rest, he said, will be provided for you. Exactly what St. Paul told us in the second reading. To get rid of the futility of the Gentile way of life, to live according to the righteousness and the holiness and the truth of God. Those are the options. Put it in another way, it's Satan or it's Jesus. As I've told you many times, there will be no in-between in what's coming. You have to make a choice one way or the other. And what a blessing that we can get ready for this, that we can really look at this within ourselves and ask some of these questions. Do I really believe? Do I really have confidence in God? Do I really trust? Think about it practically. If you can't trust that God is going to take care of you here, how can you trust even for one split second that he's actually going to bring you to heaven? And if he doesn't have the power to feed you, how does he have the power to lift your soul and ultimately your body into heaven? He's all powerful, and he is in love with you. He will take care of everything because that's what he's promised he will do. But we have our part to do. Reject the pagan ways that surround us. Live truly righteous and holy lives. Seek first his kingdom and his way, and he will take care of everything else.